Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Life in the Fast Lane. My name is Nick Carlson. I am your CTO or CEO. My CTO is sitting right next to me, Senior Kyle Parks.
You got it all backwards, man.
I do. I got it back. Well, the reason I'm a little backwards and sideways right now is because I have somebody on. It's a guest that I absolutely adore, love, cherish. And this man has been a big part of my life. You want to hear me cry? I might cry in this episode because he means that much to me. His name is Mickey Payne. He is from Northern Virginia, correct, Mickey?
Yep.
And this man, so today's episode, we talked about briefly before we fired this podcast up. A lot of people today know me across the globe, and they know me as the Mulchmate guy. And truthfully, without the stories that Mickey and I, we haven't scripted any of this. We're just going to throw it out there. They don't know where all of my, I don't know what you want to call it, talents or just kind of life experiences have come from. And Mickey is probably one of the best storytellers I know. He is a gentleman. He is also a giant. I don't remember your stats, Mickey, but in
six,
the
prime, six and a half.
You're bigger than that. I thought you were like 6'9".
No, just go with 6'7", and I used to weigh 385.
Yeah, humongous human, the biggest teddy bear you'll ever meet, nicest guy in the world. So, Mickey, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're enjoying the beautiful sunshine down in Florida right now. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me on here. I was surprised when you asked me to come on, and I'm also surprised every time you tell me that I was a big part of your life. That was just me being a friend.
Well, I know that's why you're such an amazing person, because you don't even know you're doing it, and you're great. So, you know, after all those years, Mickey, I don't talk to Kyle Hendershot anymore. I don't talk to Richard Boswell much anymore. All those boys we grew up, you know, playing with, Ryan Ellis. These are all, so for everybody that's listening, these are all big name NASCAR guys. And that's the world that Mickey and I come from. And Mickey, I mean, you're still friends with like Barney Pfeiffer and all those boys, aren't you?
Oh yeah. I speak to Barney, 2-3 times a week. And, I speak to Kyle about once a month, maybe, and call him up and harass him a little bit.
Yeah.
And, especially when I find out one of the kids' cars had a illegal issue on it, and to find out what he did wrong to one of those cars.
So what Mickey's talking about, guys, is Joe Gibbs is, you know, used to be the coach for the Redskins, and he now owns a NASCAR team. And Kyle Hendershot is a real good friend of ours. We all grew up racing together, an absolute wheel man. And he now does what, the setups for what, the 19 and somebody else?
I know it's the 19, and I want to say also the 20 car. I'm not 100% positive. For years, for working for Gibbs, he was a crew chief, a car chief. He did those roles in the Xfinity series, and then he wanted to be at home with the family, so he made it work with them, a deal with them to be in the shop, and now he's. He's like their go-to guy for the chassis and stuff like that. And he's really shown his talent. And side note on that is, I know he can't say it Mike Smith, gentleman who set my car up in Legends Racing and cut tires for almost everyone at the track. Mike Smith taught him, took him under his wing and taught him how to set a car up, a Legends car up. And Mike told him, if you can set a Legends car up, you can set anything up, because they're the hardest cars to work with. And Kyle took that knowledge and took it someplace, and he's made something of himself.
Yeah, he truly has. I mean, I last time I talked to Kyle, he was doing really good. And, you know, we had a special crew, Mickey. I mean, it was these guys, I really wish I would have enjoyed that crew and that time more, but I was so darn worried about losing to all those guys. I was so freaked out and full of anxiety just trying to beat them every week. I look back on it, it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Well, you were a little young, and you thought you had to win all the time, and you don't. You do as well as you can, and you try to perform as best as you can every time. And I think once you got the hang of that, I think you actually got more wins. And then also, I think that helped you probably in your business career also, because you learn, do the best you can, and when you do the best comes out, and stuff like that. Not to just say, I got to be first. Well, you know what happens when you got to be first? Well, someone else is going to say, I'm going to do it too. And you just need to be, sometimes the word is slow and steady. And I know we're talking about racing, but sometimes that gets you moved up to the front a lot faster.
Yeah, sometimes you got to slow down to go faster.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's like in my early days, man, I would charge those corners so hard in a race car. I mean, do you remember turning the – I could turn the tires purple at Dominion. You know,
oh, yeah.
You can melt them right off the tire almost, or the tread right off the tire. But yeah, it was just, it was crazy. So do you remember when I switched to dirt right after you switched to dirt?
Yeah, you cried about it. You're like, oh, I don't want to be on dirt. And then you won a race.
I know. Do you remember that? What was that? Was it Eastside?
Eastside.
Yeah. Do you remember that? I wish I had a video of that.
I remember it well because I started dead last in that race, and I came up through the field, and I got taken out. They didn't throw the caution, and Mike Diaz spun me, and it put me to the back of the pack with him, and I walked away from him, and then here come the leaders, and you all couldn't get around me, and I was pulling away from you, and they gave me the move over flag to let you all go by. And I had to let the top five go by, and then I turned around past them all, so they didn't give me the move over flag again. But yeah, I finished last, but I was the fastest thing on the track next to you, and you just had the track position. But I came through the field real well. That was one of my best races ever, because I felt I could drive a car, but when you're carrying two people in one car compared to everyone else, that weight hurt you at most of the places.
Yeah, you definitely see. I have this theory. So I don't know if you know this or not. So my father didn't set that car up that day. It was me and my Uncle Tony, and I looked at the tires and how they were cut, and we were just running asphalt cut tires. And so when I talk about cutting, when Nikki and I are talking about cutting tires, we're actually taking the tread of the tire, and we're literally taking and putting them on like a lathe, and you're cutting an angle to the tread. So one side of the tire, the tread is super thin, and the other side is super thick. And so it puts this like slice in it, right? And Mickey, I didn't tell anybody this, but I looked at the tires and I thought, wouldn't you want on dirt? Wouldn't you want more tread on the outer edge? And so for that race, I swapped the right rear and the left rear before we got to the track, and basically reversed the stagger. The stagger, for everyone's, you know, doesn't know what stagger is, if you take like a Solo cup and put it on a table and roll it on its side, it'll turn whatever direction the bigger side will push it, you know, make it turn, right? And that's what we would always do with these race car tires. We'd make the right rear bigger to help it go around that left-hand corner.
So you had like the bottoms of the Solo cups facing together, and then the outwards or top of the cup was on the outside.
No, in this case, what we had done is the inner tire would basically rotate more, but the outer edge of the right rear now had more tread depth to it. And so normally when you check stag, you check it down the center of the tire. But because I put the left rear on, it had a taller outer edge, which allowed the car to bite and rotate the corner faster and better.
It digs up. It grabs the dirt better because the track was a little slippery. Yeah.
I mean, we got there. Would we get 5 minutes of practice, Mickey? It was nothing.
You only get like, they call them in dirt, warm-up laps or heat laps, and they gave us like five.
Yeah, and I looked at that track. I'd never seen it before, and it was like a sheet of glass. I'm like, there's no way you're going to wheel a race car around that corner. There's no way.
Oh, you did, though. That thing held, that track held everything. I did something different also that week. I put a tire that wasn't cut on the right rear, and I put a tire that was completely shot on the left. And then on the front, I put a decent tread on it, and I wasn't too worried about the left front. But I just had all my meat on the right side and had to stagger that way. I think that's probably what helped me the most.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's crazy. We're talking about these racing stories. It's weird with racers. That was 20 years ago. I was 18 years old, I believe, that day, and I'm 38 today. And we... I guarantee Mickey and I could go lap by lap by lap and remember literally everything. Isn't that crazy how that works, Mickey?
Oh, yeah, especially when it's a fun one. When it was a fun race or something like that, like I said, I remember finishing dead last. But I also remember how fast I ran, and to me, that was exciting. I mean, I had a lot of fun racing on the dirt.
Yeah. Once I got the hang of it, I stopped my crying. I was crying like a little baby though, wasn't I?
Oh, yeah.
Mike Bryant came over to me with a bottle of milk and said, "Here, you want some milk, little cry baby?" I was like, "Screw you, Mike."
Yeah. We went over to Potomac my first time there, and I didn't change anything on the car, and I covered the whole car in mud and everything, you know, came in to get, you know, after practice and got scraped off and everything, and people asked how I loved it, how I liked it, and I just said, I love it. I couldn't get my helmet off because, you know, the smile on my face, you know.
Yeah.
Just had a wonderful time. It was something new. It was new.
Yeah, it was new, and it was a challenge. It was so different.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Were you there? So I won at Eastside, and I beat Rick Bowman. And Rick was fast. Rick was real, real fast. He was the only one that I ever saw, and he was all over me. But the next week, we went to Potomac, and that's when I joined the Roly Poly Club.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. You got in the backstretch, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I broke like a ball joint or something coming out of two, going for second, I think it was. I was flying. And I hit that outside wall, and I went over the driver's door down the backstretch.
Mm.
It was not fun. I put the car back together, Mickey, and it was so twisted. I was like, oh, crap. That's not going to work.
That ain't going to go straight.
No. We were like, what's wrong with this car? Why is it so twisted? We thought it would be okay, and it was not okay. It was all tore up.
Yeah, they get tweaked a little when they go upside down.
Yeah.
Was it as bad as the Audi?
Oh, absolutely. Way worse than my Audi. My Audi was just broken. This chassis, like, we put it on the ground, and one tire wasn't even touching the ground. I'm like, that's not going to work.
It's probably not fun to straighten out either.
Well, no, we just threw it away.
Yeah.
That chassis was toast, and we just had to rebuild the whole car. But to brag on Mickey a bit here and to kind of bring this back to the human element. So this cat would come to the racetrack, and he would call everybody and go, "You want some chicken?" And this cowboy makes the world's greatest chicken.
Man, I want the eagle now.
No, no, no. This puts the eagle to shame.
I know, but it makes me want it.
Mickey, when was the last time you did your chicken recipe?
To be honest, I haven't cooked it in about 2.5 years, 3 years.
Oh, my goodness.
But I love to cook it. It's a Caribbean jerk chicken breast. And, yeah, I found it was easier to do that because I'd show up to the track, and I could sit there in my truck, and my trailer doors would be open, my ramps would be out, the car would be unloaded, my tools would be laid out, my generator and stuff would be fired up, everything would be plugged in, and then I could get out of the truck, and it was done, and people didn't say hi to me. They said, "You got chicken?" And I said, "Sure, yeah, you can have it. We'll have a piece. You know, we'll cook some up. I don't know if I'm going to do it before or after the race." And that's what I did, and people seemed to enjoy it, and they helped me with it. They helped. I got a lot out of that.
Yeah, I mean, you were famous for that.
Yeah, I think so. We went to Southern National, and I told a guy, I said, "Get me a good parking spot in the pit, and I'll give you a piece of chicken." And he goes, "I don't want no damn yard bird." Well, when he saw everyone eating it, he come over and asked for a piece. I said, "Okay, I'll give you a piece." So I gave him a piece of chicken. He goes, "Man, that's good." I said, "Yeah, well, you can't have no more yard bird." You know? He was a little upset then because he liked it that much. But
it's impossible not to like it. It's so damn good.
I've been told it's a bit spicy.
It is, but that's what makes it so good. It's memorable.
Yeah. I cooked that for Sean Dawson and his gang. I go up to the Hagerstown Speedway with him, and I'd cook it in the pits for them, and they seem to love it. Sean has to save all his chicken and eat afterwards. He can't eat before a race. It upsets his tummy.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of with him on that one. I would wait till after races too and eat it. I couldn't do
it. And then Miss Hendershot, Kyle's mother, she said, Mickey, I've seen people who have cheated in every way. They've tried to have a light car. They've tried to have a car that's out of measurement. They've tried to have big motors, big carburetors. They've tried to have illegal tires. But damn it, I've never seen anyone try to win a race by feeding them chicken.
I mean, it is a good tactic. You go around another turn and you're like, ooh, this might come up.
You know, one of the funniest ones I ever dealt with was, so there's a guy named Richard Boswell's dad. His dad passed away a couple years ago. His name was Dickie. And I literally have known this family since I was like 6 years old. And they are a legendary family in NASCAR. And I didn't know it at the time. I had no idea. It was just Richard Boswell and Dickie Boswell. And Dickie, he was setting up one of my go-karts one time, Mickey. I don't know if you know this story or not. And Dickie's like, all right, boy, get Nicky, get in the car. And I'm like,
what's up with the Y's at the end of the name?
Well, they'd always add Nicky to everything. And I was like, don't call me Nicky. And Dickie goes, all right, Nicky Poo, get in the car. I'm like, damn it. And I got in the car or the go-kart at the time. And I was Nicky Poo from then on out, at least in karting, until I moved up to the Legends and all. And he, it was just so funny. The camaraderie we all had, it was so good. Did you have much interaction with Dickie?
Not a lot, but he did give me the best bit of advice in racing that I ever had. I was about 17 or 18. This is years before I'd even thought about getting a Legends, because they didn't even have Legends at that age. And anyways, we went down to Capital Speedway. A girl I was dating at the time, her father owned a go-kart team, and he sold go-kart parts and stuff like that. Keith Poole.
Yep. Yeah, the Pools. Yeah.
Yeah, Northern Virginia Kart Parts, I think it was.
Yep. They own State Line now.
I don't know about all that, but yeah, they're involved. They were heavily involved with it over the years. Yes. But anyways, they we went down there and his daughter, the girl I was seeing at the time, was racing, and she got taken out. Well, it was in practice. So we got the cart fixed. It bent the steering column up and all that nonsense. Mm. So he said, I got to have that cart race. The money's been here, and I need that cart to race. He looks at me and goes, you want to drive it? Now, I'd had some experience racing a mini stock on asphalt, but never raced a go-kart. And other than, you know, yard cart or something at your, beach, you know, the go-kart tracks at the beach and stuff like that. That's all I'd ever, you know, been on. And I said, yeah, I'll drive it. He gave me the once over with where to hit the brakes, and that was it. And, out on the track I went. Well, the first heat race, I go down the corner, and there was a tangle up, and I rolled the cart over.
Ooh!
And it kept the cart running. It stayed running, but had to bring it in the pits because the front end got knocked out. So I bring it in the pits, and they red flagged the race, and they said they're going to have a complete start over because there was like, I don't know, probably 12 carts in the heat race, and six or seven of them got knocked out. So they wanted the field to be full. So they told everyone to go back and fix their carts, and they brought the next heat race up. So anyways, while we're there and rolling the cart back, Victor Boswell comes over as I'm carrying the cart, and he goes, hey, boy, let me give you some advice. I said, what's that? He says they run a lot faster when they're on all four tires.
That's Dicky, man.
So I always try to keep them on all four tires after that.
Absolutely. Were you involved with the Ed Cove wreck where he hit the billboard in turn one into Old Dominion?
I was involved in a bad wreck in turn one, and I believe Ed Cove was part of it. No, it wasn't Ed. It was older fellow named Art, but no, I wasn't involved in that.
Interesting. Yeah, he hit me from behind in the right rear so hard it put my car straight on its nose, almost flipped it over backwards, and he hit He went, so the guardrail in turn one at Old Dominion used to be like 5 or 6 layers of guardrail high. So it was really, really tall because guys would go in there and just with all the heat and just, I mean, get airborne. This cat literally hit the billboard, hit the tree, and ricocheted back down into, I guess it was turn two at the time, and landed on its nose right in front of me. Because I remember seeing the red chassis go by me, and I'm like, that ain't good. And then I lost sight of everything. Well, I didn't realize I was staring at the asphalt. I didn't know it at the time until I saw the replay on a video. And Ed got hurt bad. I still talk to Ed to this day, Mickey, and he still has like knee and leg problems because of that wreck. It was huge.
Yeah, the one I was involved with was you should remember his name. He was younger and he was closer to your age, so that's why I say you probably remember his name. He was that boy come down there out of Pennsylvania, drove a white Legend with the number 41 on it.
Willie Randall.
Jackass.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. he was a clown.
If I run into him, I'd have to do it more than twice nowadays. he cost me a lot of money. He cost me a lot of time. And it was all stupidity because he said, I want to win the race. On the first lap, he come down in the corner and just drilled me. And he even told me he did it. And I shot up turn one, got airborne, because I bumped into a car. And when those tires touched, you know, because the Legends cars had fenders, but they were open wheel cars.
Yeah.
So if you've seen Indy cars, when Indy cars go airborne, it's because the tires hit one another and cause them to kick back, like a, you know, same as in go karting. And it elevates the car into the air. Well, I did that and I went up there and I found a pole that was there. Mm. And that pole shot me back into the, onto the track, and I landed, and I believe the gentleman's name was Art. He had spun, and I'm looking right at him as I'm coming at him, and I de-skinned his car. It ripped the whole body off his car. It didn't hurt a thing on the car. He actually told me thanks for doing that, because now he could buy the lightweight fiberglass because it had the old heavy body on it.
Mm-hmm.
When I landed, my chassis was on the ground and all four tires were still on the car, but they were all bent up in the air and they weren't touching the ground at all.
Oh, I bet that hurt.
Yeah. And when I landed, the car stalled and I didn't know how bad it was. And because I pretty much got, I think I might've gotten a concussion on it. I don't know. I didn't really get checked out too well, but it did crack my helmet. Oof. I remember reaching over, engaging the clutch and firing the car back up just to see if it would start, because I wanted to know how much money I was going to have to spend. At the time I was in my early 30s and I was having to pay for anything and everything out of my pocket.
Yeah.
And I fired the car up. It ran. I cut it off. I said, I can fix everything else. Then they come up and get me out of the car. Well, I'm at the top of the track. They walked me down, brought me over the guardrail, and sat me against a car. And I was a little dazed. And Sean Dawson's brother-in-law come over, and he's talking to me and keeping me calm and all this, you know, and I'm just sitting there. So he goes and grabs one of the EMS nurses. And he said, whoa, here, I got her, come over here. She's coming over. I'm like, okay. She comes over, she's checking me out, and asked me how, you know, a whole bunch of questions on how I was doing. And he says, hey, you know why he did that? And she looks and goes, what? Yeah, you know why he did all that out there? And she turns and goes, no, he wanted to meet you. And I was like, absolutely, that's why I did it. I did that just so I could meet you. Because she was pretty good looking, redhead and all this nonsense, you know, and I was like, yeah, I did it so I could meet you. That's when she determined that I was healthy and well and just let me go.
Jeez. That's too funny.
Yeah, you got it. You know, I found a funny moment in a bad situation.
Yeah, but, well, you always did.
Always try to.
Yeah.
That was there. But turn one, I think, had some of the worst accidents. That's where Barty actually got hit by Jim Lewis. Barney got sideways and was sitting there, and Jim came down through that corner, and he never cracked the throttle and ran right into Barney. And those doors were fitted to the cars, you know, pretty tight. And it bent the stopper on the door, it bent the door frame and all that, but it didn't bend anything else.
Mm.
They told him he was going to have to get a new chassis. Well, Barney's like this. Barney is a professional welder.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I don't need to get a chassis from anything. I can build this damn car if you'd let me. So he went back and he pulled the door off, which you weren't supposed to do that, and he fixed the door and all that, put it back on there, and no one could tell the difference that he ever touched the car. But yeah, that turn one was different because bump that ran across turn one, sort of like at an angle, and you could drop off of it. You basically hit that turn three wrong ways. You could hit the two low where you're going to slide up in the middle of turn one and two. You could hit it overpowered going in the center of it, and that would throw you off. Or you went around on the top and you spun out at the top. So that little area would get the car unsettled going down into turn one.
Well, there was that hump. I always would lift right before that hump, and then when I'd come off of it and the chassis would start to, like, load, I would nail the throttle and we called it a burp, and burp, and that would, like, plant the car through the corner.
Yep. That track had character.
It was great.
Some of these tracks today, they're smooth, they're nice, but they don't have character. That track had character.
That track wanted to kill us all.
You had to know how to drive. Hey, man, the proof's in the pudding. When you have the three-time national champ show up, and he couldn't set the track record without traction control,
yeah,
I'll guarantee he had it, because I know he cheated on everything else because his dad had pockets that didn't quit.
Were you talking about Ghost?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was that boy. And, good Lord.
Hey, Kyle Hendershot whipped his ass.
Yeah, he did.
He beat him, and he beat him with a legal car.
Yeah.
I can tell you the only thing that was done to that car, it had a set of carburetors on it that had been done by Larry McBride.
Yeah.
And they were legal. They Ronnie Wolf made sure of that because he took them from us twice. And had them checked because Ronnie wanted to find every Legends driver illegal. He didn't like Legends at all. That's why he became the track official for the Legends series.
Mm-hmm.
And they were legal because he drove them all the way down to the INEX to have them checked. But Kyle beat Craig Ghost with a bone stock motor, a bone stock chassis. He did the setup on the car. It is because he knew how to drive Old Dominion better than Ghost could.
Yeah.
Ghost cracked the record, and then Kyle went back out there and beat it again.
Yeah, consistency will win, and Kyle was gonna do that at that track. I mean, Ghost didn't have the seat time at that racetrack like Kyle did.
Yeah, that track was different. And then you go down into turn three, and that track was like flat. That turn was flat.
Yep.
And you had to know how to run it up and come out of the corner real high in four, which is, you know, sort of odd because how high you were getting up out of it before, you know, in the corner.
Yeah. You had to run one lane up.
Yeah.
And put the lefts on that little crack. There was a crack that went all the way around three and four, and that's where you wanted to hang it.
And you didn't want to get too low going into three because the sewer lid or whatever it was over there would disrupt the car a little bit.
I've hit that many times trying to pass people.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Mad Cow debacle in practice that one day with me?
There's too many to name.
Sounds like you have a reputation.
Let me rephrase that. There's too many to name with the head cow.
Yeah.
His little buddy was nice. He was a good guy. And he never stirred any pot. But what's his name? I went over to him after his first race, and I politely told him that he needed to stop mirror driving. I said, I'm going to be polite to you. I'm not going to yell and cuss at you, but I'm going to tell you something. You need to pay attention out there because you're going to get someone hurt. And you just right now you're not ready to be on the track. And he goes, well, I finished the race. I did real well. I said, well, I tell you what, you're going to have a group of people come over here and talk to you, and I'll be done with that. So I walked away, and then he proceeded to get his ass whipped.
Yeah, he did.
Not by me.
No, it wasn't
everyone
by you.
Everyone else came over there. Everyone else went over there and just tore into him so bad he was crying.
Oh, my father, dude, I have never seen my father more angry with a human being than that cat. That dude, I hit the wall so hard. I put a 6-inch hole in that guardrail with my Legends car, first lap of practice on a Friday. You were there because I went to go after him, and the only person that could stop me, because at this point I'm like 17, 18 years old, I'm not a small dude. You definitely aren't a small dude, and you were the only person that could hold me back because I was going to kill him. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
So I got out of the car. I hit the wall so hard with a brand new car, the engine was laying on the steering column. It was up in the dash is how hard I hit that wall in turn 4. And the car hit the wall straight on. It jumped up in the air about 3, 4, 5 feet and then landed and stopped. From full speed to 4, 5, 6 feet in the air, whatever it was, and landed about 10 foot off the wall. And you come over, a bunch of people come over, and they thought I was dead. And this is when I just started wearing the Hutchins device. And the Hutchins device, okay, for people that are listening that don't know what it is, it's a head and neck restraint that clips to the back of your helmet. It's a bunch of straps that go around your rib cage, and then it connects to your buckle and your belt through your crotch. And so I get out of the car, and that Hutchins device strapping was so far up my butt crack, it took me like a week to pull it out. And I start yelling and screaming because Mad Cal, this dumbass, had put the wrong oil filter on the remote oil filter mount, blew the oil filter off, oiled down the track, and I'm the first dude to hit it. And he's down in turn one all spun out but didn't wreck. And I get to yelling at Mad Cal. I don't even remember the cat's name. And Mickey comes over and grabs me by the shoulders and basically carries me off the racetrack, puts me down, and is like, he ain't worth it. He's an idiot. My father has a handful of wrenches because he's trying to figure out how to fix the car to get it off the track.
I thought he was going to beat him.
No, and then he proceeds to go back to my race car trailer with a handful of wrenches and hurls them through the trailer wanting to kill this cat. And it was not a good day, Tater. It was a bad, bad day. And if it wasn't for Mickey, I'd have killed him.
Huh. I vaguely remember some of that. It's not, you know, some of my memory sometimes is a little shady nowadays. Yeah, I do vaguely remember stopping you from doing it. I think I actually did that more than once, though.
Yeah, you've done that more than once with me. I was definitely a hothead for sure. And so the next day, his little boyfriend that would come with him at the racetrack, whoever that guy was, he brought me like a 12-inch cookie. And he walks to my father and he hands him this cookie and he's like, we're sorry. And my dad's like, take that cookie and shove up your ass. Fuck you, dude. And he was, man, my dad was angry. So here's what happened, Mickey. I'm not sure if you remember this part either. So that car is completely destroyed. I mean, it bent the rear end and the rear end never even hit the wall. That's how hard I hit the wall. And so that evening, for whatever reason, my Uncle Tony and my father were already planning on going and buying another race car, and they didn't tell me. So we load this destroyed race car up in the trailer, and normally we put the race car above the axles in the trailer, so it's like weight distribution, right? They proceed to push it to the nose of the trailer, and I'm like,
what are you doing?
They're like, well, we're gonna go see somebody. And I know this person's not Mickey's favorite person. He used to be a good person to me. He's talked a whole lot of shit about me over the years, and I really don't appreciate it for no reason. But we ended up buying Mike Gwaltney's number 44 black sedan. And the car, the reason that relationship went south is when we bought the car from him, 3 of the 4 shocks on the car were bent. And that really pissed us off. So that was a Friday all this went down. Saturday shows up and we pull this race car out and everybody's like, you know, you just destroyed your car. What are you doing here? And overnight we had stripped my body off of the one race car, put a whole new front end on it. The rear fenders were okay. The basic shell, the gold car that I had was okay. And then we switched the seat over, and even my steering wheel was bent. So I had to use Mike's steering wheel and all this other stuff. But we actually made it to the race. And actually, I don't know where we finished that day. I bet you it was like top 5 probably. but it was just a shock that I even showed up. I think, Mickey, I think you were standing there, like, waiting us for open the door of the trailer, and you were like, what are you doing? The car's destroyed. And I'm like, well, we did something last night, and we worked all night to get that car back together.
Yeah, those kind of things are a bit amazing with what you can fix and how quick you can fix it. I don't know if you were there, but we had so many cars one week that we actually had to run heat races in the Legends, and that wasn't normal. And I was a mid-pack runner. I think I was a better driver than I was with what I had to work with. You know, because like I said, my size was like the biggest handicap. And but anytime I ran in a last chance qualifier, if I raced in a heat race or something like that, I always ran towards the front with those other drivers and stuff like that, even with having being slower. But anyways, I'd gotten ready, got out. I was almost always the first car to go out on the line because it took me longer to get in the car. So I would always proceed to get in a car sooner than everyone else. And also it calmed me down a little bit and I get strapped in. Well, I did this and we were parked over in turn two that night. And I'm going down the back stretch of pit lane, you know, how it had the old go-kart track inside.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on that going down to go around through the pits to come up and line up. As I'm rolling down through there, the car just dropped. And what had happened was the panel bar broke off the rear of the car.
Mm.
Yeah. And I'm like, crap. So I stop the car, I get out, I look, I'm like, shit, what am I going to do? So people are like looking for me and they couldn't find me. So they come back on the back stretch and they saw me and I'm pushing the car back. They said, what happened? I said, panel bar broke. Mike Cart heard that. And Mike Cart, if I don't know how much dealings you had to do with him. Mike Cart is one of the best people you could ever have at a racetrack to be on your side for working on a car, for helping you get something from other people, tools, anything like that. He's like, wait a minute, such and such has a welder. And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, who cares if he has a welder? I got to get in a heat race, and I got like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
They're yelling for me to get back in the car. Someone goes over and gets Barney. Barney comes over, and they said, you get buckled in the car, and Barney goes, I'll weld it back on. So they jacked the car up, threw Jackson's underneath it real fast. Barney put that thing up there, and with his little tiny 110 welder, he throws a bead on there and gets that rear end welded on. And this is literally, cars are starting to move on the warm-up lap. I get buckled in, and Barney's all worried about me. Barney's known me since I was born. He was friends with my parents and everything. He's friends with the family. So Barney sticks his head in the car, and he goes, you don't go out there and do anything stupid. Just go out there and ride around, he says, and make sure that thing don't break first. I looked at him, I'm like, okay. They dropped that jack. I dropped the clutch. I lit the tires up, and down through the pits I went. I had that thing hammered down through at least third gear by the time I even got to the first corner of the go-kart track, and I was sawing the wheel back and forth, making sure that rear end wasn't going to fall out.
Yeah.
I figured, if it doesn't fall out in the backstretch, you know, over here, I'll be fine out there on the track. I come down and blew down through the pits and got out there right when they were throwing the green. And I was able to come through the field. I needed to finish third. I think there was 12 cars in the field. And I ended up finishing fourth. Didn't make it into the heat, but, oh, I drove my ass off. But, yeah. Those last minute fixes and stuff like that, those stories can be amazing. With overnight works on the car and stuff like that, I think everyone who's raced a car has done something like that one time or another, if not every weekend.
Oh, I have literally taken cars that were destroyed, and in 24 hours, I have fully stripped a car and fully built a car overnight. I've done that probably three or four times at least in my racing career, if you will.
Hold on 1 second. Hey, Sally!
That's his wife.
Get Sally. Oh, I'm sorry about that. I had to talk to the wife real quick. No, if we could, can we talk about something really funny one time?
Yeah.
All right. Kyle, as we were talking earlier, and you got to hear part of it, the magazine story. Okay. So here it is. Little Nicky Poo. he was loved by many. Everyone loved him. If you ever called Nick, you have to hear the old, this is laser cups.
Doctor, I guess
it's
relating to
the dialysis.
Yeah,
we gotta get ready.
Yeah, she said I guess
it's our chemistry control. Okay. Can you give me my
chemistry?
And it was the black. Yeah. So anyhow, Nick was business oriented even then as a teenager. And that's one of the reasons I think he used to be high strung.
Still is.
everyone adored poor Nick.
Sorry.
Thanks. And Nick, we wanted to do something special for his birthday. So I jokingly said to this girl, Sarah, who was friends with everyone, I said, we need to give a dirty magazine. So we got him a Playboy or a Penthouse or some nonsense like that. It had everyone at the track sign and autograph it. And no one had a problem doing it. Everyone enjoyed it. They thought it would give a big joke to Nick. He was a little embarrassed. But again, I don't think he was embarrassed as much as Ryan Ellis was when we had him sign it. But Ryan was much younger. Ryan was only 12 or 11 or some nonsense like that at the time. But Nick was our kid. He was everyone's little brother. And the drivers that they were the same age, they were still a little older than he was by a year or two. So he still was looking up to them.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. But Nick, like I said, Nick was well liked by everyone, and you got to bear with me. I'm having to roll out, but I'll stick with you.
Yeah. So that magazine Mickey's talking about, it's got a red cover. It's got an Asian chick on the front cover. It's a Playboy, and I bet you today that thing's probably worth a pretty penny. The names that are in that book signed, even Ryan Ellis is a NASCAR driver. Like that's what this cat does. Yeah. And I think he signed, I don't know where he signed it, but I should pull that thing out. I'd have to dig it up, but it's got, I don't know, 100 race car drivers' signatures in it.
Yeah.
Autograph. It was crazy.
That's funny.
Crazy. It meant the world to me, honestly. It was so funny.
Yeah, they, everyone enjoyed doing that because, like I said, everyone liked it. Hold on.
You know, it's interesting while he's doing that. Mickey's saying everybody liked me. It's crazy because all I did was spend my time trying to beat all of them because they were all so good. Like the Northern Virginia racers, that little clique that we had, that group, and the timing of it. Like Mickey was talking about the heat races he had to run. When I first started, the very first race, I qualified 25th out of 36 cars. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a scream.
That's a
screaming packed bees. I mean, these Legends cars, they rev out. Their RPMs, they hit the rev limit like 11,000, 11.5.
Oh, dude, my ears would be pissed.
Oh, my God. There's screaming bees running around this racetrack. And I remember being 13, let's say. And I remember starting that race, and I knew so little of how to shift a car that I started off, I think the race you're supposed to run in fourth gear or fifth gear, whatever it was, I started in that gear. So here they come. I start 25th. There's 11 cars behind me, and everyone passes me. Poof, they're gone. And I'm like, crap.
How he worked his thing.
Yeah, how do you ship this stupid car? I don't know how to do it. And
I'm about to drive it.
What was cool was that by the time it was all said and done, I avoided all the crashes. I passed some cars. I ended up finishing that race in 20th place. I thought that was the craziest, coolest experience of my life, and it showed that if you stick through with something and persevere, you'll make it through. It's crazy.
Well, it's like what you always say is it's the journey, not the finish line.
Right, right. That's exactly yep. right.
My racing experience started in a mini stock. A lot of people didn't know. People always thought I started a legend. I started in mini stocks when I was 16 years old, and didn't have enough money to get back into racing until I raced about 2.5 years. And I wasn't able to get back in the car again until I was 30, until I could afford it myself. My father took a loan out. Not to build the mini stocks that we built, but my first time on the racetrack, they had us go out there and run the caution laps, and we for some reason they were doing track cleanup, and I had probably done 15 caution laps. You know, we were only going about 20 miles an hour, and They gave us a two to go. They were going to let us go, and then we were going to run our practice laps. Well, I'm in a brand new race car, brand new driver. I'm doing everything I can to stay away from everybody because that's what I was told to do. And they dropped the green. I come up out of four. And I'm looking at the flag stand. And I see the flagman waving the green flag. And I'm like, okay, got this. And I turn the wheel because I'm heading towards the flag stand. Car don't turn. Mm. So I turn it again. Car don't turn.
Something ain't right.
I got my foot flat to the floor. And I'm accelerated. I'm probably doing about 50 miles an hour at this point. So, naturally, what I did was I leaned forward to see what the hell's going on. Well, you're strapped into a car. You're not going to lean forward. What I did was that same motion caused me to pull the steering wheel off into my lap.
Oh, my God.
I didn't have it buckled right. The safety latch on the steering wheel pinched on the bracket. It didn't go into the slide, the groove. And I was told before you get in the car, pull on the steering wheel to make sure that it doesn't move. Wrong answer. Push on the damn thing until you hear it click.
Correct.
So, yep. So guess what? I'm heading with a brand new car, 16 years old. My dad's standing there watching me. And I have a steering wheel on my lap. I grabbed a hold of the steering column, and I turned the car down and spun it out into the grass and kept it off the wall. And proceeded to try to figure out what to do. Everyone's running over to try to help me. I got the steering wheel on because no one could see what happened. Then I had to figure out how to put it in reverse. I got the car in reverse and I got it backed out and got myself out of trouble. Sorry. Okay. Anyways. Okay, catch my breath.
Take your time. We can edit anything out, so don't worry about a thing.
Yeah, I'm on my way to dialysis. And
yeah, take your time,
sir. I'm having a rush a little bit.
Sorry. Yeah, we can end this, or you can take your time, man. We're good. Don't worry about us.
I'm good. All right, let me start real quick. I'll go over again so you can cut it, and you'll have it all squared away without all the heavy breathing. I came up out of four after we did all those caution laps, and when I nailed the throttle, the steering wheel basically came off of my hands. When that happened, I didn't know what to do, so I grabbed a hold of that steering column with my bare hands, and I was able to turn the wheel. This is a rear-wheel drive Chevy Monza with a four-cylinder in it, and I was able to turn it with no power steering down into the grass, save the car, get the steering wheel back on. My dad comes to the guardrail. He's having to explain to me how it goes in reverse because those old cars had this safety switch on where you had to pull it up, a trigger.
Mm.
I get that out, get it in reverse, and I was afraid my dad wasn't going to let me drive a car anymore, so I had to get it going again. And he asked what happened. I said, oh, I just broke loose. And you know who taught me the trick about the steering wheel? Well, that was Mr. Barney, and Barney was right, but Barney, you know, I had to tell him, I said, y'all, you got to push it to hear the click first, then you pull it. And after that, whenever I got into a car, from that day on, I always checked that steering wheel. I never wanted that to happen again. And you know how many times I've heard of someone having that happen to them?
Probably more than enough.
Yeah, you know, my first time in a race car. That's why if you watch NASCAR, every time he gets in the car, one of the last things the crew member does, reaches in that window net and grabs that steering wheel and yanks it up on him.
Absolutely. I've been fortunate. I've never had the steering wheel come off in my hand before. That is scary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I can see your reaction now, Nick. Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah. Grab the shaft, and you're like, oh, my God, how you turn it? That happened to Dale Jr. one time.
Oh, my God.
And you can see him. He grabs a wheel, and he's, like, pulling on it. I'm like, holy mother of God.
Thank God I wore my brown pants.
No thanks.
Yeah. I went to a race in East Carolina to watch it was a former boss of mine, Dale DeLozier, race down there. He was running modified at the time. Well, they announced all day long, Dale Earnhardt's going to be at the track tonight. Dale Earnhardt's going to be here at the track tonight. I'm like, oh, shit. Wow, this is going to be fun. We're going to meet Dale Earnhardt, right? So they all kept on going, Dale Earnhardt. Well, someone rolls out this speed-up Lumina. I mean, this late-model stock car. Every inch of sheet metal on that thing had a dent on it where they took the body off the car and beat it out straight, and then rehung the body. And you know how ugly that looks.
Mm. Oh, yeah, ugly.
And they bombed it white, and they put a black number 8 on it, and they were telling us Dale Earnhardt's going to be here. And we're actually thinking we're going to meet Dale Earnhardt. So we're there, and we're watching the race. And I'm telling you, that track was a fun track to watch. It has the front stretch is a big V shape. And you go down in turn one, and the track elevates about 20 feet up, and it's like a ramp. The cars almost get airborne as they turn a real sharp 90-degree turn into the backstretch. And then you go down the backstretch, and you do the opposite, where you drop down 20 feet into turn three. And we went down there to watch all this. So they announced Dale Earnhardt's on property. Dale Earnhardt's on property. We're like, oh, wow, we're going to get to meet him. Now, I wasn't a Dale Earnhardt fan or nothing like that, but I just thought, cool, we'll get to, you know, get to meet somebody. Well, then they announced that they bring him up, give him the key to the racetrack, and I think also, or the key to the town of East Carolina. It was Dale Earnhardt Jr. 16, he was like 16 years old. And I'm thinking, who wants to meet him? Who the hell is this guy? I didn't even know Dale Earnhardt had a kid. I was like, what? So he shows up, and he's like, that's what I'm driving tonight? I don't think he knew what he was driving. I don't think it was his car. You know, it was something that someone threw him in and told him to drive it.
Yeah.
Well, he goes out there, and he's running. He wasn't running too bad. Got involved in an accident. They come in. They pulled the hood off the car. And, pardon me. They pull the hood off the car, and they work on the car, and they send them back out. So he's keeping up. He's still on the lead lap and all this. And he's running. They have another crash, and he comes back in again. And they're working on the car. And then they send them back out. Well, one of the cars that was involved in the accident, he comes down pit lane. He's parked the wrong direction on pit lane, has the car up in the air, and he's under the car on the driver's side facing the front stretch wall. So, you know, he's all the wrong direction you want to be for anything to do with safety at a racetrack. He is not anything what you want to have. Well, I told my dad, I said, hey, I'm going to run down and grab me a hot dog. Okay. I said, you want anything? He goes, no, I'm fine. I said, okay. So I walk on down. And my dad, I don't know if you remember meeting him or not, but he wasn't a little man either. He stood about 6'4", probably 300, 325 pounds.
Yeah, I remember
him. And he was a bit stocky in the shoulders.
Yeah.
He had a barrel chest.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I'm down there getting my hot dog, and caution comes out. I'm walking back up pit road, and I'm doing the things I've been taught and how to do it so you don't get hurt and you're doing it the right way. And I'm coming upon that car, and I'm staying away from it. Here comes Earnhardt down in the pit. He hits the brakes, and the brakes just split apart. Everything, caliper and all that, they're flying.
Mm.
I mean, one of them almost hits me in the head, and I'm ducking that, and then one's coming underneath that car, and I'm jumping over that. And I'm like, holy shit. You know, and I'm like, he's gonna hit that car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that dumbass that was laying there working on his car, he jumped up. He sticks his hands out because he's gonna stop that car with no freaking brakes, a good 25 mile an hour. It wasn't gonna happen, dude. Just was not gonna happen.
Right.
He sticks his hand out, and he had a Moroso air filter on that car. You want to know why I know it's a Moroso air filter?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's interesting details.
Yeah, because he decided to put his hands out, and when he did, and Earnhardt come with no hood on the car, his hands went right into that air filter, crushed it down, literally putting two handprints into it, one on each side, because I saw the damn thing afterwards, because I thought it was hilarious that he did what he did. He flipped up in the air, and I tell you, he must have gone, and this isn't even an exaggeration. He went a good 20 feet in the air. He landed on his feet and then fell to the ground. I mean, this guy was screwed up.
Mm.
So, going along with that, my Brat Rod, my father saw this, and he thought it was me with my hot dog. And he come running, and there was a group of people around there. My dad removed people to get to where he was at. When he saw that it wasn't me, he's like, oh, never mind.
It's all good.
All good. I didn't throw you anywhere. I didn't do nothing to you. And we went back over and looked at that car after it got hit, like I said, you know, and saw what the problem was. But that's my experience with meeting one time of meeting Dale Earnhardt Jr. I almost got run over by him.
Jeez. I was at the Dominion Speedway beginning of this year, the road course race they had, and I pull up.
Yeah.
Because my cousin Ryan and my Uncle Tony were there racing, and I wanted to bring my kids down to see him and show him what racing's like. And I get out of the truck, and I look over, and this chick walks by, and I'm like, man, it looks like Kelly Earnhardt. And she walks back by again. I'm like, SOB, that's Kelly freaking Earnhardt. Oh my God. You don't run into the Earnhardts that often, but it's cool when you're at the racetrack and they're just normal people just doing their thing, enjoying life, racing. I mean, it's like boating, right? Like it's just a hobby that we all love and we're passionate about. And they're just, what I love about racing so much is these stories. I mean, look at us, Mickey, we're 25 years removed and we're just, you know, I don't know about you, but I absolutely love talking about this kind of stuff.
I ran into him again at FedEx Field.
No kidding.
He came up to watch a preseason football game, and we got down on the sidelines. And as we were there, I saw that it was him, so I went over and asked him for a picture. And it's on my Facebook page. It's one of my famous T-shirts that says, "I see short people."
Yeah, I know that shirt.
I just mentioned that in my dialysis office. The next thing you know, everyone's talking about it, and they're telling us a story about how they see short people. But anyways, my friend took the picture, and the picture didn't come out.
Oh.
I said, "Ray, you had one job, and you didn't do it." I said, "Now everyone knows who he is, and they're swamping him in photos." And I felt sort of bad because no one noticed him until it was me. So I went back over and I said, "Mr. Earnhardt, now this, I think he's younger than I am," and I called him Mr. I said, "Excuse me, I'm sorry, but camera didn't work. I get another photo." He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Thanks, man." So I go over, I said, "Ray, take more than one this time, take a whole bunch." So he goes to take the picture. He's taking the picture, and I got my arm around Earnhardt, and I said, "Yeah, I thought you might have a problem with taking my picture with me, your picture with me." He goes, "Why is that?" And I said, "Because my T-shirt." He goes, "Oh, don't say something like Chevy sucks, does it?" He goes, "I'll be pretty pissed if it does." I said, "Oh, no, it doesn't say that." After he takes the picture with me, he turns and looks at the shirt. He just started laughing. He goes, "That's the funniest damn thing I've ever seen."
It is. I could see the look on his face, too, when he saw it. That's great.
Yeah, it's a black shirt with bright orange letters, and it says, "I see short people."
It sounds like your kind of T-shirt.
It is. Well, you got to understand something. This, I mean, Mickey, I think he's being very conservative on his size, but he has got the presence of, like, a king. Like, the biggest human being you've ever seen. Big, scruffy beard, just a man's man, you know? And it's just like, his presence just holds, like, okay, we're not messing with this cat.
I register as a midget?
So I think my guy Sam, I think, has met you once, Mickey, years ago, and Sam stands at 6'5", and I'm like, look, when you meet Mickey, I'm telling you, he's going to dwarf you, and he's going to throw his arm around you, and you're going to feel scrawny, and that's exactly what you did, and he never forgot it, and he's like, "Oh my God, that's the biggest human being I've ever been around," and you're telling me he gets in a race car? I'm like, not only is he getting a race car, but he can wheel the hell out of a race car, so... It's just so funny. The whole thing just, it doesn't make any sense.
I had a little sticker on the back of my car that read, "World's Largest Legend Driver."
Oh, and you are the world's largest Legends car driver by far. I think I might be number two.
Yeah.
Well, Mickey,
the fat man from Langley.
Fat man but, from Langley.
Yeah, he ran the 21. He came up to Manassas a few times and ran with us.
Did he?
I can't remember his name. But he was a hell of a nice guy too.
Yeah.
But I tell you, if we got time for one quick one.
Yeah.
You talk about me not getting upset or angry. There was one time I got upset and angry out on the racetrack with somebody. Supposedly this guy used to run late models, and then he got out of race, and then he was getting back into it through the Legends cars. And he come to the track. He had an SUV and an open trailer. And anyhow, we're running, and I was going to get a legitimate top 10 finish without crashes and accidents and just moving my way up like that. And I was doing real well. About 5 laps to go in the race, and this jackass spins me. Coming out of 4, he just busts me in the ass and spun me for no reason. So... I go down in the grass and all this, you know, and I have to recruit myself and everything, you know, and I knew who it was. So we're under caution, and I'm chasing him down. And we get under caution, and I run up on him, and I did everything I could to just dump his ass. And I tried spinning him this way, that way. So he puts the brakes on. Well, I just started downshifting. And with the Legends car and the gear I was running and how heavy I was, I could downshift it and I could still push it because that car was considered heavy at that point. It was going to get traction. And I finally got to dump him. And I felt, oh my God, the track's gonna be pissed off at me for doing this. I can't believe I acted like that. So I turned into the pits at, right there going before turn one. And I also thought I knocked the front end off my car. So I turned into pits. I came back up pit road. And Dave Menefee.
I remember Dave.
Dave Menefee, the flagman.
Yep.
He's on the radio. Dickie Gore, the former owner of the track, he gets on the radio and he tells Menefee, send someone over there to talk to him. And I got into my pit stall and Les Stager come over. And so did that guy that we used to call the parking Nazi, the one who always got real anal about parking and all that, and who didn't know what the hell he was doing in the first place.
Uh-huh.
He'd come over. Well, I'm pissed. I get out of the car, but I'm keeping my cool. Menefee comes over the radio. He says to Les Stager, he goes, Les, when you get over there, you might want to keep your distance. Because that's going to be a big man that gets out of that car. Les said he watched that door open, and he said it just started coming out, and it was still coming out when he got closer and closer. He thought it was something was wrong with his eyesight.
Isn't that funny?
And, So I get out of the car, and he says, you can't drive like that. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but you all shouldn't have that guy out here on the track. And they go, what's wrong? I said, he's phoned me out. He's too stupid to be here. And about that time, when he pulls in the pits, he pulls up on his trailer. His trailer wasn't attached to the car. It shattered out the back window of his SUV. And I said, see, he's too stupid to be here.
God damn.
And they walked away and they said, he can do whatever he wants. Next thing I know, my phone's going off. Alan Hendershot's calling me. He goes, Dave Menefee just called me from Flagstaff. He's telling me you're in a fight. I said, no, I'm not in a fight. He was telling me everything word for word that was said over the radio. And it was pretty funny. Getting that communication that quick.
Yeah.
How fast it traveled.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So,
well, guys, I'm going to dialysis.
10-4.
I'm in here now. And that's why I have problems with my breathing.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate your time and you taking, you know, the ability to just sit back and talk some stories with us.
Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate it. It brings a lot of joy to me. It helps me out.
Good.
Not to bring you guys down or nothing, but y'all can cut this off if you have to, but if you ever want to talk about the cancer, if I could get that out there, that'd be a great appreciation, because I want other people to know that, you know, one, I donated all my time. I donated, not all my time, but I donated a lot of time to Children's Cancer Research.
Yeah.
With St. Baldrick's.
Yeah.
I raised money for them over the years. And then I turned around and I went out and I got myself stage 4 colon cancer. And that's part of the reason why I'm also on dialysis now. And if we could ever talk about that or something, that'd be great, because I want people to know to go get themselves checked out. And it really is a life changer when they tell you you got the cancer, because it's opened my eyes. It's also one of the reasons I probably call Nick more often than I do nowadays, because I call him and just check on him. He's always there to listen to you. And we talk about his business. I always ask him how he's doing in his business, because I'm so proud of him that he's got his business working out real well. And he's very impressive on how he's run it and how he came from laser cuts on his phone, hearing that all the time,
yeah,
to Dawson Manufacturing and Mulchmate.
That's right.
And he's really a good up-and-comer entrepreneur, and he works for everything he gets. I've not known him to do a half-assed job, and I show his product to people all the time, and they're impressed with it, and it's really enjoyable to know someone who's done, who's had a dream his whole life and has worked towards it to get to that area, that part of his life, to enjoy it. And Nick, like I said, I'm real proud of you, and I'm happy with everything you're doing and your podcast. I went back and I listened to some of it. It's there. You're going to grow it more. I can see you're going to develop this into something else, and I hope it really takes off for you and does something for you.
Thank you. Well,
thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mickey, for coming on. I wasn't sure if you wanted to share, you know, your personal side and your journey and the latest, you know, the challenges that you're facing. If you're willing, I'd love to have, you know, a podcast dedicated to, you know, your journey and your learnings of what you found and what you'd like to share. I wasn't sure where your position was on that, but
that's fine. I tried to keep it upbeat. I'm sorry I got a little slow on things, but
that's okay.
My breathing is sometimes affected with when I move around,
yeah,
because my blood pressure changes a lot and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Listen,
there's a dude. We really appreciate you. Don't even worry about a single thing. I can tell you, you're a blessing to the world and to everybody that you've ever touched. I would love to have you back on to do more, spreading the word on exactly what you're talking about with cancer. And one of the big things that I'm very passionate about is, you know, just like cancer in general is something that a lot of people face, and I really hate it very, very much, because it's one of those things that, you know, gets just not talked about enough, and I'd be more than willing to.
No.
I've been affected a lot by suicide. My best friend blew his brains out, and I hate that. And I am very much for, you know, mental health, and very much for supporting people with cancer and cancer research and all that. So please schedule out a pencil in a time that you think would be good, and you've got good energy and willing to talk again. And we'd love to have you back on as soon as possible. And we love you and thank you for your time. And I hope everybody enjoyed this podcast.
Thanks a lot, everybody. And thanks for listening. And thanks for listening to Nick and stuff like that.
All right, Mickey, man. Well, thank you. Have a good day. And we'll catch you on the next one. And I again, love you. And I want you to know that. And thank you for everything you've always done.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, man. Have a good day.
Take care, Mickey.
All right. You too. All right. Bye. Thanks, Kyle.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, there's probably one of the nicest human beings on the planet.
So one thing, I haven't told this very much recently, or I haven't told many people about it, but people who are close to me know about it. But my uncle went through stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Okay.
So he was pretty much at a point where they were like, hey, you're facing either your deathbed or you can do a stem cell transplant. Bone marrow transplant. And my uncle went through the bone marrow process, and he said it was the most painful process you could ever go through in your life.
That's awful.
And he went through it. He is now cancer free.
Good.
But he had to undergo essentially, I think it's at least 10 years that he was struggling with it, and, you know, got through it, went through remission, and then it came back harder than ever. And, you know, it beat the snot out of him. And he's, you know, one of those parts of my life where it's, you know, I know what it can do to a family. I know what it can do to an individual. So it definitely affects me on a personal note of just seeing a family member go through it.
Yeah. And Mickey, to me, is family. I mean, every time that I see his name come up my phone, I'm like, this is going to be a good time. Like,
yeah,
he's just that person, and he carries that good energy. And something that I've really learned from him from a distance, and I told him the other day, but I had to tell him because he probably just doesn't know. Not that he's dumb, he just didn't know. But, you know, I know very much of his journey, and he's been very open about it since the day it started. And I've been very quiet about it because I just feel bad. Like, it sucks. And I told him from a distance, I've been watching how he's been, you know, handling himself through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it really makes me step back, look in the mirror, and go, dude, stop whining.
there's a storm, but you sometimes have to look at the silver linings.
Yeah.
The silver linings are what's going to make everything easier. And yeah, you're going through a shit show, but.
My storm is just like heavy rain. His storm is like golf ball hail. And
it's the it's literally the perfect storm.
It literally is. He's and he is handling it with like from the outside. It to me, it looks like he's handling it like he's a champion, and he's like done this before somehow, and his attitude is so good. And I'm looking at him going, how in the world aren't you being bitter? How are you not angry? And he's not. Like, from the outside, he's literally put up videos online on his personal Instagram page of him being so weak from the chemo and all the stuff, medicines he's on, where he caught himself on the ring doorbell falling outside and just like, eating shit. And then he posts about it and he talks about it, and he's like you heard him there at the end of the podcast when he had to go because he's getting busy, and we really appreciate his time, but you know, he wants to talk about it. And to me, I'm like, I'm scared to death to even bring it up. Like the other day when him and I talked, I'm like, Mickey, I don't want to bring this up, but like, I care, and I guess I'm being nosy, but I actually want to know. Like, I literally just said, I was like, how are you, how is Mickey? And he's like, man, it's a fight. And I'm like, I think fight is an understatement.
I think it's part of like a self-actualization. You have to be like, okay, well, if I'm going to go out, I want to go out with the best possible attitude and have, and I hate to say it, but what do you want on your stone?
Right, your headstone. What's it going
to
say?
What is it going to say? And he wants it to say loving, caring, most thoughtful person ever.
In the biggest deal. Yeah. And the biggest, most caring person I've ever met.
Yeah.
So
big teddy bear.
Big. I mean, this dude, you know how you and I in size comparison, how vastly different in size we are?
Mm-hmm.
I'm you in this scenario. And yeah. that freaks me out because I am normally not the smallest guy in the room. I am one of the biggest.
I love it because I can crawl on the bench and wipe down parts.
It's true. It is true. I couldn't do it. So anyway, guys, I hope you really enjoyed that episode. Did you enjoy that?
I did. I didn't talk as much, but it also gives you that reminder of just like, hey, it really is a part of the journey. And it's not all, yes, winning is your end goal, but sure. If you don't, you have to go, okay, did I make that 1% better?
Well, the end story, you know what I get out of it? The end story is today we're creating those memories again.
Yeah.
And Mickey and I literally could sit here and fill this SD card up in this recorder with stories. Like, there was a story about Barney Pfeiffer and Mickey and I racing, and unfortunately for Mickey, he is just a huge human. And when it comes to weight and racing, those two don't mix. But he still loved it, and we still had a good time. I, on the other hand, was lighter than him, but heavier than everybody else.
Yeah.
But I was fast. And I remember lapping. I was passing for the lead, lapping Barney Pfeiffer, our friend, and Mickey was – we split the leader, and I pushed Barney Pfeiffer down the front straight at Old Dominion Speedway, and I could feel him, like, pumping the brakes really hard, trying to slow down for the turn, and I knew – exactly when I could lift off his rear bumper, so I could push him into the corner so hard that he would slide up and out of my way, but not crash.
Yeah.
And that's a huge story that we didn't get into, and there's a million other stories that we could talk about that were just incredible, like just stories of our race car trailers on fire because tires blew out, and we're all like trying to put each other's tires out because they're on fire going on the highway, and sitting at, you know, Waffle House at 1 o'clock in the morning because we just want to race. And like, there's these stories like you'd never believe, but I wanted to share some of that and document it, and hopefully we can get him back on and let us know. I really want to know from you guys, did you enjoy some of these stories from my past with Mickey Payne? We'd love to know what you think of them. You know, and if you want to hear some more of these really cool, awesome stories from back in the day, we can absolutely get him back on. I want him back on for very selfish reasons, in a good way. But without that all said, I think we're going to end the podcast here, and we'll jump into another one.
I like it. I do know there was one story you guys were talking about how you were about to beat the snot out of the one guy.
Oh, yeah.
Matt and I have a very similar story of I was the only one that could hold Matt back because he was about to kill a kid over some stupid-ass high school drama.
Yeah.
But I don't know how it happened. He was coming, like, going towards a lunch line. Like, he was beelining right toward this one boy. he was going to beat the snot out of him. And I came out of like the tech hall and there was like three guys trying to hold and pull him back. And I just swoop him up on my shoulder and walk with him. He's like, motherfucker, I'm going to kill him. I'm like, no, you're not. You're going to your table. Sit down, you little bitch.
Mine was literally, I remember I was 16. Now I'm thinking about it. I had just left driving school to get my actual driver's license. It was a Friday. And I remember when the wreck happened, it hurt so bad. Like, I had black stripes down my chest from the belts.
Yeah.
And I had stretched the belt. So the belts on in a race car, they're so tight that you can't stick your hand between them. It'll take the breath out of you. And when you wreck, the belts, if the wreck is bad enough, you want the belts to give a little.
Yeah. But you also want to be, like, not moving around, like, a little ragged on them.
Right. So there's, like, this fine balance. So I had the belts as tight as they would go because I love that. And I had stretched the belts 4 inches. That's how hard I hit the wall. The steering wheel was bent all the way to the windshield. That's how hard I bent. And then the engine ended up at my knees. And I got out of the car, and I pulled that Hutchins device out of my crotch. It was awful. And I turn and I look, and I see the dude. I don't know his name, but it was the team was called Mad Cow. And his car looked like a cow. I'm like, it's stupid. And I just remember going, you gotta be kidding me. And I was like the Hulk. And my father's like, oh shit, he's pissed. And Mickey was between me and him. And I went to go running down the front straightaway to go kick this guy's ass. And Mickey just grabbed me like a rag doll and scooped me off the ground. And I'm like, get off me. I'm gonna kill him. And I just like, and the thing was, what I didn't say about the story was the week previous, this guy, Kyle Hendershot, we were talking about, his dad, Dave, and I tangled going down turn three. Dave was a little older at the time. He's probably in his 50s or 60s. And he chopped me off and took me out, took himself out. And when I ended up stopping, the car ended up finishing wrecking. I stopped looking up the track in the middle of turn three and four. Well, the yellow flag had waved. And typically when you get in a wreck, you don't just take your belts off right away because you need to make sure all the other drivers know to chill out. Well, this clown in the Mad Cow car, gotta kill him. The week previous to this wreck, he was in turn one. We were literally getting ready to pass and like lap him. That's how slow he was. And he was in turn one when we wrecked in turn three, and we ended up in the apex of three and four. That's the center of the corner, if anybody doesn't know what that is. The yellow flag waves. This cat drives 17 seconds. I have it on film around the racetrack and proceeds. I'm sitting like this. I'm sitting nose up the track. Hits me in the right rear tire 17 seconds after I crash and the yellow flag's out and spins me around three or four times and destroys the race car. I hate this guy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like using the word hate. I hate this man. This guy's an idiot. So I remember not unbuckling, waiting to make sure I was good, and I could hear him coming. Boom, and my car spins and spins and spins, and I felt my chest cavity compress so tight you could have fit a phone book between me and the side seat. Oh god, yeah. I just aged myself with the phone book. Like, it was like at least a four. You could stick a 4x4 post between my rib and the side of the seat. That's how much my body like compressed.
Yeah,
and so we spent all week rebuilding that race car, and I cracked the throttle in practice on Friday. In turn down the back straightaway into turn three, and I'm at full tilt. First lap, full tilt with a brand new race car, or at least a new to me. We rebuilt it, so it's basically new. And the car turns right immediately, wham, and just full speed. I don't even have time to lift, and I hit that wall so damn hard. It's the hardest hit I have ever taken, and that's the whole story between Mad Cow and myself. It was awful. So lots of crazy stories like that. I have more that I could tell you from younger days, older days, all kinds of stuff. But anyway, guys, thanks for joining us for another episode of Life in the Fast Lane. It's kind of why we call it Life in the Fast Lane, because I live a very high-speed life. As Mickey Payne said, I've always had a lot of energy. I've never had a lack of passion for anything, and I've given my heart and soul to everything I've ever done. Want to give a big shout-out to Mickey Payne. Thank you for joining us for the show. I hope you really enjoyed yourself. I hope that we brought back lots of amazing memories, some bad, but at least we can laugh at them now. And I hope you recover from your crazy, crazy journey you're on. We love you. And thanks for joining us, guys. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please follow us on Instagram at Mulchmate USA or Dawson MFG. And follow us on LinkedIn. You can follow Nick Carlson, Mulchmate, or Dawson Manufacturing on LinkedIn. Also on Twitter, just Mulchmate. And, of course, Facebook.
Yeah.
I figured something out on Facebook. I got to change a few things I figured out last night. But reel I put up on Instagram got like 12,000 views overnight.
Nice.
I'm doing something right. And I'm consistently doing this. So that's really cool.
I'm doing something right. I think I figured it out. And then the next time I think I'm doing something right.
I think I'm doing something right. Well, that's because I don't look at things like I'm Mr. Perfect. There's always room to grow. So, guys, thanks for joining us for this episode of Life in the Fast Lane. We love you and we'll catch you in the next one.
And if you want to be a part of this beautiful journey, hey, fastlane@gmail.com.
Yeah. And hit us up if you like this show because we're just kind of chit-chatting here, but I got another message last night from someone saying how much they loved it.
Good.
And that really helps me, and I want you to know that. So, all right, guys, have an awesome day. We'll catch you in the next one.
Don't miss me too much.
Mulchmate.